Am I on? Better? Okay, great. Okay. All right. I think some other people might come. So why don't we just let ourselves arrive here? Just close your eyes and, to the best of your abilities, let go of whatever it took to get here. This morning, setting up the kids with a relative or a babysitter or whatever it took, and just allow the background noise just to be background noise. The kids downstairs may or may not be loud. And as people come in, just don't worry about it. Just to really allow your attention to the land here, kind of gathering yourself in this space, in this room, in this chair or on the cushion on the floor. And in as much as you can, to allow yourself to feel the support of the chair, of the ground, the wall behind you, if you're leaning against it. And allow yourself to slide into this idea that there is nowhere else you need to be, there is nothing else you need to be doing, except embracing this gift of time that you've given yourself. To be with yourself and to be with others in the community of other parents. And just to notice if your mind is feeling agitated with your day and it's hard to settle. Okay. Then it's just hard to settle. To set aside any feelings like, oh, wishing you were otherwise. Or any kind of judgments that may arise. It's like, oh, the mind is busy, humming, it might be quiet, it might be checked out and spacey, whatever. It's okay. Just really allowing yourself to be with what's here. And then to also check in on the body level, how your body's doing tonight. It may feel like it's been a long day, and your body may be fatigued. You maybe had too much caffeine at some point in the day, so there might be a jittery feeling, or you might just feel really rested and, again, that sense of being collected. However your body is, just to welcome, like, oh, okay. My body feels like this right now. To hold a sense of acceptance and welcoming, letting go of any sense of wishing it were different. And to lastly, check in with your heart. It may be helpful to put your hand on your heart to allow a focusing of the energy. And even there's sort of the body benefit of bringing that warmth of your hand to your own heart. And to just check in, how's your heart right now? And we all may be carrying something. Something that's weighing us or buoying us up. And again, offering this heart body, the emotion, a sense of acceptance. Okay, maybe your heart is heavy today or tired or full. Just noticing. And allowing your attention to rest in the heart center also helps bring the energy out of the head to rest in the heart space. As this place, when we land in it, there's so much wisdom and clarity. It's so easy to get pulled back up into the head to think about things And for now, again, if your hand's on your heart, just to feel into that, where your hand is resting on your chest, what that feels like, that contact. Thanks. Thanks for coming back. And I know there are people out there, but let's start if we could. I might wait till these people come in before we do names and things, but I wanted to allow a little time, as I will each class, to have some space to see what your experience was in the holding the concept of generosity in the course of the week. If you thought about it, if you didn't think about it, or that idea of practicing, or just noticing when you actually are being generous, or when your child or your kids are being generous, and just how it was to have, if it was there, if it wasn't, that's fine, but just how it was to have that sense of generosity being a thread through the week. And we have a mic for you guys. Shall we have a handheld mic, or not worry about it? So thank you for being here. And tonight, as sort of the arc that we spoke of last week of what we'll be doing, the foundations of the Buddhist practice, the first being generosity, that opening of the heart and the flow that may or may not come. And the second pillar, which again, with that image of a bridge, that deepest pillar that goes in the middle of the river, is that of sila, or the precepts of ethics, ethical living, morality. My favorite translation of it is living in harmony, particularly with regard to family life, and how the teachings really point to, if we abide by or undertake the training to abide by these guidelines, these five precepts, then things become easier, that we become safer when our kids know that we're not going to harm them, we're not going to take anything from them, we're not going to misuse our sexual energy in any way. We're not going to take intoxicants. Some translation is like you're not taking intoxicants such that it makes you stupid. Because I'm not up here saying like you can never drink. It's not that. It's just being mindful of what are we taking in that may impact our ability to clearly relate in our family. And we'll read through the precepts. The first one, and I know for Anne and Lisa, when you guys were here with me last year, we were doing the paramis, we touched on ethics. So it's a little bit of repetition, but not that much. Maybe, how about we should start with reading them? And I love Thich Nhat Hanh's. I think they're so beautiful. And they are the longer ones. Should we read the longer ones? What do you think? They're kind of the same long. All right, let's read. So we'll just, if you have any hesitation, like, oh my God, I'm not committing to that, it's okay. There's no secret pact being scribed in heaven if you are say these aloud. So just to notice, really, it's so helpful to notice what resonates, what doesn't. And someone I heard, I think Rebecca Bradshaw in her talk she teaches back at IMS, say that if you aren't kind of having a hard time or something doesn't have that kind of reaction, then you're not taking them seriously, because they can be really challenging. So to start with the five wonderful precepts by Thich Nhat Hanh. So if we can read them out loud, that would be great. Aware of the suffering caused by the destruction of life, I vow to cultivate compassion and to learn the ways of protecting the lives of people, animal, and plants. I am determined not to kill, not to let others kill, and not to condone any act of killing in the world, in my thinking, and in my way of life. Aware of the suffering caused by exploitation, social injustice, stealing, and oppression, I vow to cultivate loving kindness and learn new ways to work for the well-being of people, animals, plants. I vow to practice generosity by sharing my time, energy, and material resources with those who are in real need. I am determined not to steal and not to possess anything that should belong to others. I will respect the property of others, but I will do everything in my power to prevent others from human suffering of other species. And actually, I'm going to stop us here because tonight I just want to focus on these two. And then next week we'll pick up the next three. And the first one, I'm determined not to kill, or I undertake the training to protect life. I was at a training 2 weeks ago in New York, and so we were talking about Sila, and there was something that I think one of the teachers had shared about that we know the idea of not harming, and particularly with our kids, that that's the intention to do no harm, that we would warmly embrace the Hippocratic Oath of not harming. And the subtleties beyond what that means of like, I'm not, you know, we're not going to kill them, we're not going to harm them, but in a way of looking at it from the point of view, like, how do we really create enough space? Again, I just so love that image of the clearing, to allow the life force of our kids to come forth, such that the non-harming is not that squashing of, I want you to be this certain way. And yes, again, this beautiful line of like, what's the boundary? What's in teaching or cultivating a sense of responsibility and good citizenship, whatever words we want to put in that, in the way of raising our kids, but also how do we let their life force really shine and to hold that and meet it. And I wanted to read two poems as they kind of juxtapose each other. And the first is Billy Collins' On Turning 10. Anybody know it? I might cry. On Turning 10. The whole idea of it makes me feel like I'm coming down with something. Something worse than any stomach ache or the headaches I get from reading in bad light. A kind of a measles of the spirit, a mumps of the psyche, a disfiguring chickenpox of the soul. You tell me it's too early to be looking back, but that is because you have forgotten the perfect simplicity of being one and the beautiful complexity introduced by two. But I can lie on my bed and remember every digit. At 4, I was an Arabian wizard. I could make myself invisible by drinking a glass of milk a certain way. At 7, I was a soldier. At 9, a prince. But now, I am mostly at the window, watching the late afternoon light. Back then it never fell so solemnly against the side of my treehouse, and my bicycle never leaned against the garage as it does today, all the dark blue speed drained out of it. This is the beginning of sadness, I say to myself, as I walk through the universe in my sneakers. It is time to say goodbye to my imaginary friends. Time to turn the first big number. It seems only yesterday I used to believe there was nothing under my skin but light. If you cut me, I would shine. But now, when I fall upon the sidewalks of life, I skin my knees, I bleed. So turning 10 is no picnic. And I think we forget that turning. Billy Collins, his book, The Art of Drowning. And there's that real sense as we watch our kids move from that magical, fantastical, you know, my kid used to talk about living part-time in the fairy realm, and, you know, it slowly stops. And that's appropriate, developmentally and hard. So it's the partner poem for that. It's by... This is funny. Victoria Rydell Bedecht. In this poem, it's called Poems That Make Grown Men Cry. And the author, poets pick poets they love, and the poet who picked this poem is Billy Collins. So it's funny. So this poem is called Bedecht. Tell me it's wrong, the scarlet nails my son sports, or the toy store rings he clusters 4 jewels to each finger. He's bedecked. I see other mothers looking at the star choker, the rhinestone strand he fastens over a sock. Sometimes I help him find sparkle clip-ons when he says sticker earrings look too fake. Tell me, I should teach him it's wrong to love that the glitter, that a boy's only a boy who'd love a truck with a remote that revs, batteries slamming into corners or Hot Wheels loop-de-looping off tracks into the tub. Then tell me it's fine. Really, maybe even a good thing, a boy who's got some girl to him. And I'm ripe for the days he wears a pink shirt on the seesaw in the park. Tell me what you need to tell me, but keep far away from my son, who still loves a beautiful thing, not for what it means, this way or that, but for the way the facets set off prisms, and the prisms spin everywhere, and from his own jeweled body he casts rainbows, made every shining true color. Now, try to tell me, man or woman, your heart was ever that brave. So we walk this line with our kids of wanting to support perhaps the four-year-old who's bedecked in pink and feather boas. And life might be hard for that boy as he grows. And to become that 10-year-old who then looks sadly at his bike that's drained of its blue speed. And this is what we watch and we witness and we partake in and we try not to contribute to. Yeah. And the ways in which I have really been thinking about this the last couple of weeks of how to really hold that space of allowing with my daughter for her both to be herself, to watch my own tendency to want her to be a certain way, and sometimes that's wise and sometimes that's annoying, but really more truly looking at how do I see and support her spirit to grow such that the schools don't always cultivate it. In fact, schools can often just box our kids and say no and try and make them small so that they'll behave and pay attention, and some schools do not. But institutions, schools are not so nimble. I was listening to a talk yesterday about collaborative intelligence. Do you know it? And I can't speak, I just have no, just other than this talk, but this real beautiful way of looking at there are all these different ways of thinking, and can we really value that way of thinking? And even just this class values you guys sitting still and listening, right? And some of you might be like, I need to move. In which case, please, feel free to move. Not during the meditation so much, but if you need to stand up, if your way of learning is to move, then I really want to invite you to move and see what it's like to really listen to how do I best take in information? And that's why I want us to be able to talk, because some of us process through talking and listening, and some of us process differently. So I want to make space for that, of how do we use this time for each of us to really be able to learn. I know there are people in this room that know more about this than I do, but just wanting to name that this structure is set up such that it works really well for some people and not necessarily for everyone. And bringing this with our kids of how to really see, particularly with those of you with many or more than one, they're different. And that gets complicated when you're on a schedule and you need to like, let's go. And how to make space for this way of allowing the spirit to still get sunlight. And we're going to have cloudy days. That's fine, of course. But if we can hold that intention of not only would I like to do no harm, but I'd really like to honor and protect, cultivate, allow, again, that sense I spoke of last week of being a refuge. Can we be a refuge for the spirit of our own kids, which critically means do we allow ourselves to be a refuge for our own light, for our own sense of spirit, that too can be fostered and bloom. The Jung quote of the greatest impact on our kids' life is the unlived life of the parent. And this can mean all sorts of things in the sense of, I would have done da-da-da-da if I hadn't been a parent. It also can point to ways in which the conditioning that we get as we got as kids, that we haven't quite cleaned that up yet, and then it gets put on our kids. But really, how do we make time in our lives that are already pretty full to make sure that our own spirit gets nurtured and fed? Because if ours doesn't, it's awfully hard to nurture the little one sometimes. So that this counts, like we count. And being that role model of like, oh, mom's really, or dad is really, that life force is alive, and it's so beautiful. You know, kids can see it in our eyes, and they can see it when it's not there. And sometimes we're going to have it, sometimes we're not. This isn't like, let's feel bad about ourselves for not living that spirit, but just making space and even holding that aspiration or intention of, yeah, How do I cultivate my own sense of aliveness such that with my kids I can see it? With the little ones, it's so right. That's all it is. Like, they are that bright light. And to be able to still see it in our kids, but also see it in ourselves. The second precept of I'm determined not to steal, not to possess anything that should belong to others, of the not taking what doesn't belong. And this has been a fun piece to wrestle with, and particularly because my 8-year-old is really now at a place of like, no, don't talk to me, leave me alone. Just go to room. And I'm a therapist, so I was like, no, really. If you talk about things, you'll feel better, and you can share it with me, and we'll talk about it. And at one point last spring, she's like, oh, I wish that you were still a lawyer. I'm so tired of you being a therapist. But she's totally screwed. So I'm saving for her therapy account for later. But how do I, as parents, to respect that space? Are there ways in which if I get too like, no, tell me, I'm leaning in too much to her space. What's being given in an energetic way from our kids, and what's the honoring as our kids get older when they say, no, back up. Okay. Can we give that generosity? This second precept really has that filter of generosity in it, because it's restraining ourselves, not taking what's not offered freely, but it's also like, I'm a safe place. I'm not going to take it. I won't take. And I don't know if any of you had this experience, but I remember when my kid was little, and just, you know, this is sort of embarrassing, but when they're little and you kind of just wipe their nose and grab a booger. And I remember when she was old enough that she just gave me this look like, don't do that. And I say like, oh, you are too old for me to be doing that to you. And she's like, yeah. So that it changes as they get older of what's okay and what level of what might be an intrusion now would have been appropriate when they're little. And just our own needing to modulate and regulate, oh, it's so nice back then. Okay, well, now we can't. And just our own willingness to be flexible and see, well, what's actually being called for now? And what's being offered? What do I want to take? Like, I want to take the pain away from her. I can't. You know? And that's heartbreaking. Because she's not 10, but she's having a very similar experience right now of the real sorrow of seeing our kids struggle and also having to let them struggle. And that's part of the generosity of like, it's okay, I'm with you in it, and I know you can do it, but I don't need to meddle and fuss and be annoying. So the way of looking, again, another lens to consider, like, what are the ways, and when we're relating to our kids, are we letting them come towards us or moving in too much, and that holding this idea of the of not taking what's not offered. So when the door slams, okay, whatever we do with it, but not to just watch that reactive place that might come up. Okay, what's really first to take that pause? Okay. Let the first response go by and really sit with what's the skillful way to react. We're not always going to be able to do this, of course. It's fine. But again, just inviting in that intention of being really able to be like, what's being offered? What's being asked for? Is it space? Is it understanding? Is it silence? If she gets in the car, do I need like, how's your day? No, just let her be quiet. Just what, and maybe your kid is that one that needs you to really be more engaged in space, but sort of really allowing ourselves that freedom to be attuned to the different personalities and soulfulness of our kids. So, how about if you close your eyes? And I want to ask each of us to imagine your favorite place on earth. A place when you are there, you are so alive. And this could be your bed. It could be your backyard. It could be the beach, the mountains, somewhere, anywhere. The invitation is that you are there by yourself. But somewhere when you are in this place, sitting on this rock or on the beach or in the woods under a tree, wherever you might be, you are alive. You can feel your heart. Your senses are awake. And stuff like that. I'm like, oh, this is so beautiful. And in as much as you can, let yourself really drink in that spot. And you might have trouble. Don't shop around. Just kind of go with one. That might not be the perfect one, but just some place that you really, there's a lot of joy when you imagine yourself sitting in this place, wherever it might be. And really drink it in. What's the sunlight feel? If it's sunny, what's the light feel like on your face? What's the temperature? Is there a breeze? Is there a creek running by you? To open up as many sense doors as you can to really, really have a detailed sensory experience of being in this place that's very nurturing to you. And as you feel into yourself in this place, and again, taking in whatever the physicality of this place is, what do you notice about how you feel? How does your heart feel? How does your body feel? What's the mind state? How's your head? And to the extent that you can, really allow this sensing into be an imprint. And if you were to name one quality of this place, of this aliveness, put one word to it, what would it be? Feel joyful or generous or happy or whatever the word might be. And sort of let the words bubble up and pick one that feels most resonant with this place that you allow yourself to visit. And then, if you will, to imagine that word becomes transformed into a stone in your hand or a leaf or something tangible you can hold in your hand as the talisman. And then tuck that in your pocket. And the second question, when you're ready, and you can stay in that place if you want. And the second question is, if you picture your child or your kids, maybe when they're sleeping, and maybe for those of you, those of us with kids that are a little older, to remember them sleeping when they were 3 or 4. And just to let your mind take in what they look like. For those of you with ones younger than 1 or 2, just to see them in their sweet sleepiness as they are right now. And how, if you can really remember them, that age again, if they are that age, what life force do you see growing out of them? What qualities? Is it the quality of generosity? Is it the joy of just being alive? If you were to put one word on this expression of your child or your children, to think of this spirit that lives and dwells and radiates out of our kids, how would you characterize, or what word might you use to describe this brightness in our kids? And this is something you might not feel about your kids right now, and that's totally, totally fine. This is why it might be helpful to think of them as younger and asleep. Which is really, they're not talking to you. They don't want anything. But just to allow yourself to slip into that place where, like, oh, this is my kid. These are my kids. Look at what they're, that brightness in their eyes. What does it say to you? And I understand it's kind of a hard question to put one word to it, but just try and see what it is. Maybe it's a phrase. To play around with the idea again that the kids are little, of like, what would the spirit want to express? This bright light that's shining. And here too, to kind of drink in the that connection with our kid, of seeing them when they're so full of life and their eyes are bright, whatever activity they're doing that they love, perhaps. And we see our kids so alive and excited. The joy of being alive, or handing you that pebble. And if you feel like you have a good enough handle on this question, to imagine your kids in 20 years. They're grown, the boys have facial hair, they're deep voices, the girls are young women, they're out in the world. And how do you see this life force that we're touching into when they're three in their adult self? How do you imagine it if we could cultivate and protect and nourish this bright light spirit of our young kids? We kept it intact and supported it such that in 20 years it just radiated out from them. Who would they be? And really just imagine that those bright eyes of the 3-year-old or the 1-year-old are the bright, bright eyes of the 25-year-old. What is that like to imagine? And finally, can you imagine bringing that 25-year-old or those 3 25-year-olds to you in your beautiful space, such that they see you like that? They see you in your radiant beauty. You see them, they see you. What's that like? And then I'd love to open it up to what you thought, or what came up, or whatever. So thank you. Thank you for your attention and for going with me. I got a little carried away, but thanks. So I had forgotten to read the homework, which is that this week look for ways in which you can celebrate or cultivate the spirit of your child or your children and your own spirit, to really pay attention to that piece too. And then how can we find ways to let our kids know that we cherish their unique gifts and expressions of themselves, and notice too how this might bump up against our own idea of who we think our kids might be, or even who we think they should be. And again, next week we'll leave time in the beginning to see how this goes. And thank you again so much for coming. This is really a delight to be with you. We'll see you next week. And you can always contact me during the week if something comes up or if you want to talk. So thank you again and have a great week. Thanks. Enjoy the rain. I think it's supposed to rain. Nice.